In Chicago, two comedian skeptics named Andy and Art were mysteriously abducted by the illusionary mastermind and conspiracy theorist known only as Mr. Bunker. The following serves as a record of Bunker's attempt to convince non-believers of the truth about conspiracies and paranormal activity. Andy and Art give an uninterrupted presentation and verdict on the plausibility of these offbeat topics, delivering what they call the whole enchilada. Will Mr. Bunker convince these two skeptics any of this is real? Will it convince you?
Welcome to Mr. Bunker's Conspiracy Time Podcast. As always, I'm your co-host, Art Stone, and with me, as always, is your co-host, Andy Hart.
Hi, Bunk Funkers. It's good to be with you.
What was that? Was that a Ronald Reagan? Like, what were you doing?
Hi, Bunk Funkers.
Oh, okay. That's a little
more It's good
Reagan.
To be with you.
Were you doing like a Johnny Carson? Is that what you were doing?
I don't know what I was doing, to be honest with you.
Well, Andy, I gotta say,
there's some weird, wild stuff about to be on this this
weird,
episode.
Weird, wild stuff. Hi-yo!
There you go. There's Ed. There's old Ed. Right, Ed?
Ed, yeah. Yeah, Ed McMahon.
You know, Andy,
they call me Ed McMayo.
They do. And McDonald's did turn you into a sandwich for a little while. Mm-hmm. That was just a bunch of mayo between
the
two
McMayo.
Buns.
Yeah, it was the Big Mac bun configuration with nothing but mayonnaise.
That's right. Did not sell well, but...
Not a big seller.
You know what, Andy? You know what mayonnaise reminds me of?
I know what it reminds me of.
And what's that?
Fish.
Well, fish works as well, Andy, because these are all things that are...
beautiful white color.
Yes, they have a very white, milky color. And today's topic, Andy... is a race of alien beings that are tall, milky, white creatures called the Tall Whites.
Oh, that's a good descriptive name for them.
Bunk Funkers, these were brought about through the writings and work of one Charles James Hall, a former U.S. Air Force serviceman, who allegedly encountered these alien species while they live right here on Earth amongst us.
Yeah, living... out in the Nevada desert.
Charles, his monotone and matter of factness often lends credence, people say, to his being this stuff being truthful. But You know what's very truthful here, Andy, is that today's topic came to us as a suggestion from my Bunk Funker.
That's true. We were tipped off. So to speak.
We were tipped off and ticked off.
We were tipped off. We were PO'd. We were freaking peeved. But we got a very nice email, MrBunkerPod@gmail.com.
That's right.
From a Bunk Funker, just like any of us, suggesting that we look into this topic about Charles Hall and the Tall Whites. This came to us from a Bunk Funker named Dyson.
Thank you, Dyson.
Dyson, thank you. This Dyson said, you know, that they had just recently come across the documentary on Amazon called Walking with the Tall Whites. So this is something that's, I forget the release, but it's relatively recent.
Yeah.
And so Dyson was inspired to have us look into this. And Dyson, we're so glad that you did.
Yes.
Because this is a fun topic.
This is a very fun topic. It's been a while since we've done a alien species sort of look. We did Lyrians a little while ago.
Yeah.
Haven't really dived back into any alien species. So it's been a while. It's been a while. And
yeah, I guess that stained our reputation a bit that we haven't been going back into.
Well, that and a lot of other stuff.
Well, yeah. I mean, but specifically like the fact that our reputation's been stained because it's been a while since we went back and talked about a different alien race. alien species.
Well, here's the thing, Bung Funkers. If you can't wait to get into all this delicious alien action, extraterrestrial UFOs, living amongst us kind of action, hear about these wild, crazy little critters. They're not little. I shouldn't have said little. They are not little. They're tall creatures. As always, you can look in the show notes of the and they find the episode description. Whatever podcatcher you use, there will be a timestamp right at the top telling you where you can scrub ahead to when the research begins. Because first, Andy and I got to give you a little glimpse into the bunker lore. There's so much lore, just like there's lore of the tall whites. Andy and I have lore going on in the bunkerverse.
Yeah, yeah.
We are embroiled in a heated lawsuit with the titular Mr. Bunker.
Oh, my God. I mean, as far as backstories and like details about the inner workings go, I mean, we are the big box store of that type of stuff. I mean, we're the big box store of lore.
Yeah.
We're the Costco of lore.
Right. We're the big lots.
Yeah, we're the big lots of...
We are the TJ Maxx, fucking clothes strewn everywhere. Doesn't seem to be anybody working in the store. Everything is like on clearance.
This is all the lore that nobody else wanted to buy, and now you can get it at a very deep discount.
Surplus, not well-made clothing. Lore.
But Bunkfunkers, we have... I mean... I hesitate to even call it bad news because it's almost no news.
Yeah.
We unfortunately didn't get very much accomplished today in court because the court was in a recess.
Yeah, Judge Dredge Judy. Judge Dredge Judy said that she had some business to take care of with her the fish tank in her tummy.
Yeah, she was getting her fish flushed, I think.
That's right, she's getting her fish flushed
Which
out.
I think for her is just actually a colonic now. I don't know how it works.
Yeah,
this was all exhibits, extreme science, but she had to go back and see exhibit. Yeah,
that's right. And so she said she's going to put the case on recess.
Yeah. Court's in recess.
And so everybody, us, Mr. Bunker.
We were allowed to leave the courtroom, but not allowed to leave the court grounds.
Right. There's a parking lot and kind of like a field with a little gymnasium, a little playground.
A little merry-go-round.
Right. Right. So we had recess today. I mean, there was a lot of fun to be had. You know, we were playing knockout with the kangaroo in the court. David Crosby was there. He was playing knockout as well.
Yeah.
Did throw out his hip.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, and got knocked out.
Yeah, which is bad because he's still recovering from those gunshot wounds to his knee. Yeah. So, you know, he's in a bad shape, but right. I mean, I think he'll be okay.
Knockout was really fun. We played,
they had basketball there.
Right.
I think probably the highlight of the day for everyone was, doing like American Ninja Warrior on the jungle gym,
sure.
You know, the monkey bars.
Yeah. We kind of played like lava as well.
Yeah,
like
the floor is lava.
The wood chips were lava.
Right.
In this scenario.
That's always a fun one.
Yeah, I mean, the stenographer, unfortunately, was stuck as the court stenographer was it for a little while there.
Yeah.
When we were playing lava.
Which is hard because I admire the stenographer agreeing to play because they still have to record everything that happens at recess.
Right, right.
So they're walking around with a computer on wheels, typing into it. It looks like Karen from SpongeBob. It looks like Plankton's computer wife. But the stenographer recorded everything that happened. So, right. I mean, let it be known that I came in third place in dodgeball.
It's true. Andy did come in third place in dodgeball. Of course, Andy also hid behind all of his other team members while they got knocked. They got hit on the dodgeballs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was teammates with the injured David Crosby. I was teammates with six of the hung jury.
That's right.
I was also, I was also teammate with three of Mr. Bunker's parrots.
Very good at dodgeball.
Yeah, they
fly around.
Yeah, yeah, they were very good at it. So our team didn't do so well.
No.
But you know what? We had fun.
You know, we had a big, big, like, steal the bacon kind of battle. It was very fun. Obviously, you know, in the center, we put a literal slab of bacon,
mm-hmm.
Raw bacon. This is raw, uncooked bacon in the center. And the game is just that you line up on either end of the field and two people get called out and they have to sprint as hard as they can from each end of the field till they hit the middle, steal the bacon, and then try and get back to their side before the other player can tag them.
Right.
Obviously, I mean, the kangaroo in the court just fucking cleared house on this one. This
Yeah, it was not even a contest. And boy. I mean, I got sick from eating all that raw bacon.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, you unfortunately kept eating the bacon.
Yeah. Yeah, and it really was uncooked and dirty because it had been on the ground multiple times. I wasn't the first person to go.
No. So
it had been handled by other people and thrown in the dirt and stuff. There was a lot of bugs on
it. Yeah, I mean, you were taking big old chomps. You accidentally bit the ass of one of the hung jury when you had to run at the bacon.
Yeah, accidentally.
Yeah.
Accidentally. Whoopsie. I'll tell you, that was the firmest thing I sunk my teeth into all day.
Oh, my God. Oh, boy. Buns of steel.
Yeah.
On those guys, huh?
Yeah. I'd like to make a bacon sandwich with those buns. You know what I mean?
An ice cream truck came by. We all got some ice cream. Yep. I, of course, got a fun little popsicle in the shape of Shrek with gumball eyes.
Yep.
Vanilla.
I got a strawberry shortcake.
Delicious.
I only ate the crumb outside and then threw the rest away.
Oh, why would you even bother with the ice cream?
You know, we played Red Rover.
Oh, Red Rover.
Yeah, it was really a lot of fun, to be honest. And, you know, we had the natural advantage at Red Rover because we're still wearing all of our, you know, D. Snyder, like Road Warrior type of outfit. So
we have a lot
of padding to like charge into the line of other people. But I mean, I'm telling you, some of these hung jury, like they're not just good looking. They are well built.
That's true. That's true. Genetically, you know, they're blessed and we are not. And they were very good at Red Rover. I mean, it was incredible.
Yeah.
It was a fun day.
Yeah. You know, I mean, you know, we went to court. Art and I like to make the most of every situation, and we really had a field day today. We went wild. And, you know, afterwards, Judge Dredd Judy called us all back into the courthouse. And, you know, unfortunately, we didn't get any more of the trial done because at that time it was quiet time. It was time to have a snack.
Right.
Then we had to lay down on our mats and you try to take a nap.
So, and then Judge Judy said, okay, everybody line up from, you know, and who's the line leader? Of course, Mr. Bunker's the fucking line leader.
Of course. I mean,
of course, he has to be the line leader.
Has to be.
And his last name does start with B, so he was already kind of at the front of the line.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, I'm in towards the end. I'm not the caboose, but I'm close.
I'm right in the middle, right where I like to be.
Right. And so, you know, we're all lining up to get our milk cartons. And then, of course, you know, they're so fucking hard to open, those milk cartons. I mean, you got to split them in half, twist them back, and pull it forward. It's like...
Yeah, you got to pop it out.
It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, no, and... You know, but I do appreciate a nice mozzarella string cheese stick. That's a good snack.
It was a very good snack. And of course, David Crosby brought those in. It was his day to bring in snacks.
Yeah, it was his snack day.
It was his snack day, so he brought in the snacks.
You know, normally, I mean, yesterday it was Mr. Bunker's snack day.
Right.
And so he brought in like just packets of unflavored gelatin.
And that snack sucked.
Yeah, and he's just like, oh, yeah, you can mix it in water. And it's like, okay, then the water just gets solid. And he's just like, he's got a water bottle, and he's just there with this solid bottle of water. And he's like...
He just kept making like a shrug and like throwing his hands up like they're two little plates. Like, oh, what do you want me to do about it?
Yeah, and he's slurping the whole time on this Jell-O water, unflavored gelatin water. And this is the bad stuff. Like, this is the stuff made from horse bones. It's got horse tallow in it.
Yeah, there's still some pieces of horse in there.
Yeah, it smells like a barn. It
smells like horse.
Yeah, it smells like it's very horsey. And we're not talking Arby's either.
Oh, boy. But no, David Crosby brought those.
David Crosby hooking us up with the good snacks.
Those awesome fucking mozzarella sticks. And then it was quiet time. It was time for nap time.
Yeah. We all pulled out our carpet squares and... as happens every day about that time in court, we pulled out our carpet squares and we laid down on the floor.
What kind of fucking court has carpet squares?
A all of them. I think it's required by law. That's in the Constitution.
I say get us some actual cots.
Okay.
That's what I fucking say.
Okay. Well, you know, if you want to see your taxes go up, then fine. For now, we got carpet squares. But we all laid down.
Obviously, the whole court is sponsored by Empire Carpet.
Yeah. 800-888-237 Empire.
Today.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously the court kangaroo.
So restless.
Cannot sleep.
Oh, my God. I mean, tapping his feet, stamping his tail.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, Art's a light sleeper. I fell asleep almost immediately and nothing can wake me up. In fact, frequently, I find myself there asleep after the court's been closed and the janitors are like buffing me because they think I'm part of the floor.
Oh my God, you look so shiny.
Yeah, yeah, I'm very shiny. I have no hair anymore. It all got buffed off.
Yeah, you do look like, what's that guy's name? Wooly Willy?
Yeah, Wooly Willy.
Wooly Willy?
Wooly, yeah.
Wooly Wally?
Wooly.
The guy whose hair you can put on his
Wooly
head?
Wooly Wally? I don't know.
It's a magnet?
Yeah, I know what you mean, though.
He's a magnet.
And that's what I look like. So all I need is some metal filings to stick all over my body.
Bunk Bunkers, Andy Nude looks a little bit like the game board from Operation.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I have a lot of scars, you know, in all the same places as the Operation person. Appear on the live version of that show? Maybe. I'll never tell.
You think the man that they modeled the Operation guy after got like royalties and he's appeared nude in front of so many children? Is he a pedophile? He's fucking nude.
He's not anatomically correct, though.
Wait, what?
It's smooth.
I thought that was a doctor's training tool.
It's smoothed. They smoothed the genitals.
I thought he didn't have genitals. I thought his tummy covered his genitals.
Oh. Well, then, yeah, that's...
What Operation game were you playing? Holy fuck. What are you talking about? I played it with my uncle.
His tummy covered his genitals, but it does really sound a lot like me.
I played Operation the way my uncle wanted to play with me, which was a picture of him, fully nude, and I would have to perform surgery, take out his breadbasket, find the butterflies in his tummy.
He made a...
the bones in his arms. I don't remember the funny names they gave that.
The funny bone.
This funny bone.
My uncle made a life-size replica of himself, a dummy, and then, you know, made me dissect it. I don't know. I don't know about that guy. I would like to know more about the Operation model.
I mean, his Adam's apple.
Oh, yeah, the Adam's
apple. Broken heart.
Yeah.
Spare ribs.
Yeah.
Wrenched ankle.
You know, I mean, honestly.
This guy was fucked up.
Well, he had a lot of problems. But you notice that the cure is just taking those parts of his body away? Like,
yeah.
So now he doesn't have an ankle. He doesn't have bones in one arm. He doesn't have an Adam's apple anymore.
He doesn't have his ankle bone connected to the knee bone, which is just a rubber band.
Yeah, I know.
This guy was fucked up.
This is a real sad.
This guy had some really bad health concerns.
Sad excuse. For a human being.
This is not... He had a Charlie horse? This is not teaching kids.
Yeah.
You should not be getting surgery to take care of a Charlie horse.
No, yeah. If you need surgery for that, and there's an actual horse inside your body, like, you should be... I mean, this is probably... This is some Mr. Bunker stuff to have a whole horse inside of your body. A tiny horse.
Oh, good Lord. But, we kind of had nap time, and then by the time everybody kind of woke up...
Plus, his... They cut huge holes in his body to remove this stuff. And then if your tool touches his skin, you get electrocuted. What kind of skin does this guy have?
This guy has a layer of magnetic skin, like underneath his epidermis, epidermal layer. He also has a nose that lights up.
Yeah, so I think this is some sort of cyborg.
This is some kind of cyborg, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer hybrid creature. This is a very fucked up man.
Yeah. If it can even be called a man at this point. He's more machine than man.
Fucking Mattel, you've got some explaining to do, buddy.
And we're going to take you to task, Mattel. For what you've done. You created this abomination. As some hybrid that you created in your sick lab. And then you just ship it off for all of us to dissect for our pleasure. And it's fun. We admit it. We love dissecting that poor being over and over again. But it's not right.
It's not. It is not right.
So I got a good nap anyway.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I unfortunately didn't sleep very well. That fucking kangaroo. He should not be allowed in nap time.
But hey, good news. Me getting buffed all the time by the janitor at the court. I finally got all my Dee Snider makeup off.
That's true. You did.
Yeah, because my skin was starting to fall off.
Yeah, you were looking very flaky.
Yeah, I shouldn't have used permanent makeup. Should have used real makeup.
Permanent makeup, of course, yeah. Rookie mistake.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, overall, I mean, it's kind of a wash today.
Yeah, a little bit. We, after nap time, it was like nobody really felt like getting back into court work.
Yeah.
You know.
Judge Dredd Judy had dinner plans.
Yeah. By that time, also, I think maybe the kangaroo had scratched off the number line that was on my desk. You have a semi-permanent number line taped to your desk.
Yeah.
We all had that.
Yeah, yeah. For sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Nobody. Okay.
We all had that.
And maybe some of us struggled to tell time using an analog clock, but that's okay. We eventually learned.
Some of us struggled to tell time with a digital clock.
I know. I'm always making my clock spell out boobs.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always 8:08 in my house.
It's always boobs o'clock in my house, baby. Let's party.
Boob o'clock. I'm surprised that wasn't one of the things in operation you had to fix. Boob o'clock. There's a clock in the...
They right should definitely make an adult operation game where you have to like get drunk and perform surgery on a actual man with actual genitals.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you
don't... So he would have like a horse's cock.
Yeah, and if you don't do it right, they tase you.
Yeah, they fucking tase you. You would have a horse's cock. He would. What else would he have?
You have to remove it.
You have to remove it.
Yeah, that's the whole thing.
What else would he have?
The adult version.
Yeah.
Horse's cock. He'd probably have. A glory hole. You'd have to fix that.
I guess the rest is the same. Writer's cramp. He has a writer's cramp, apparently, in the real version. That's so fucking stupid. It's in his wrist.
He had to have an operation to get rid of a cramp.
This guy's a fucking
Charlie
writer.
Horse and a cramp. Yeah, he's a writer. No wonder he had to sign up for all these weird medical experiments. He had to do what he had to do to make ends meet. That's another problem he's got to sort out. He's got his ends meet.
Oh, man. Well, that was court today. It was it was definitely an adventure. Not really. We just kind of took a nap.
But we had fun.
We did have a lot of fun, Bunk Funkers. I mean, yeah. Recess is fun. Court's fun.
Yeah,
go to court.
Go to court. Sue somebody.
Get involved in a lawsuit.
Yeah, get sued or sue because it's fun.
It is fun and a bun.
And there's free bacon.
And there's free bacon raw. But, you know, Bunk Funkers, we have one more segment that we gotta get to.
Oh, yeah, we gotta get to this.
This is important. This is a bunker alarm.
Yes, today we are ringing the bunker alarm for a very special Bunk Funker, a Bunk Funker who sent us a very nice email to suggest an episode topic. And while we have yet to do that episode, we are going to do it in just a couple of minutes because that Bunk Funker is the very same Bunk Funker we already told you about. We are ringing the bunker alarm today for Dyson.
Dyson.
I'm going to get in the ring with Dyson.
I'm going to vacuum you up, Dyson.
Dyson, we're going to ring today. We're going to set up the Bunk Tech Bunker Alarm 3000 to ring for you. Very special bunker alarm to show our gratitude for your support and for this great episode suggestion. So give me just a moment to program it. Let's see. I have the sounds of the Bunk Tech Bunker Alarm turned up sufficiently. So.
Oh, yeah. Here he goes. He's looking. Wow. Wow. Well, it sounds like a Dyson vacuum.
Yeah, it sucks. Okay, I think we got it.
Here we go.
All right, Dyson, this bunker alarm is for you. Now, the Bunk Tech Bunker Alarm 3000 is a very sophisticated piece of equipment. I could press a button and it would play a perfectly synced alarm, no problem. But Art and I are purists. We like to count down so that you have an idea when the alarm's going to start going.
So pure.
You know, just so you don't think that something's on fire or there's a tornado or whatever. So in 3, 2, 1. Wow, Dyson,
wow.
This bunk's for you.
Felt very Mr. Krabs-like.
Did it?
A little bit.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. Maybe not.
Okay.
Let us know what you think.
The Mr. Krabs alarm. That's what we'll call that one unofficially. Dyson, thanks so much for this great episode suggestion. And thank you for being a bunk funker.
That's right. Thank you, Dyson. And bunk funkers, you know, obviously you can always get your own bunker alarm. You just really have to write in and ask. But if you send in an episode topic, a suggestion, or something else, well, you might find yourself as the recipient of a bunker alarm. But without further ado, we need to get to the Mojave Desert to learn a little bit about these aliens called the Tall Whites. Whites. So, I mean, bunk funkers, this is a really fun topic. We think you're going to enjoy this one. Let's get into it. This is the Tall Whites and Charles Hall. We'll figure out the title later. Title will be changed in post. Here on Mr. Bunker's Conspiracy Time podcast.
Enjoy the podcast.
Hey, how's the weather up there? Do you play basketball? Is it, you know, proportional to your height? Bunk funkers, these are all examples of things that tall people here on Earth have to deal with on a daily basis. It isn't right, it isn't fair, and they deserve better.
What are you doing with that strange box? Is that an alien spacecraft? Is it, you know, proportional to your height? Bunk funkers, these are all examples of things that our topic today, the Tall Whites, may or may not have to deal with on a daily basis. It isn't right, it isn't fair, and they deserve better. And that's because the Tall Whites are a race of really tall, thin, pure white aliens who might possibly reside here on Earth. And boy, oh boy, do they get into some shenanigans.
Oh, speaking of shenanigans, one of the main reasons we know about this secret race of alien beings residing right here on Earth is thanks to a former U.S. Air Force serviceman, James Charles Hall. And boy, oh boy, do they get into some wacky encounters together.
Oh boy.
And we're going to give you the whole enchilada on these old white string beans, don't you worry. But before we jump into the Tall Whites as an alien species and detail some of Hall's interactions with them, let's talk about James Charles Hall, Charles James Hall himself. Hall first detailed his experiences with the Tall Whites in his 6-part book series titled Millennial Hospitality.
Oh, I think I looked this up in Urban Dictionary once. That's where you're eating ass and you offer to take their coat and ask if they want something to drink.
Yeah, well, that's a lot better than the previous sex move that you made up, the Sarah McLachlan. That's where you're holding a gun to their head while whispering, I will remember you.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Sarah McLachlan.
Sarah McLachlan.
Yeah, McLachlan.
I will remember you.
I got... Yeah, the emphasis is really important. I've written a lot of definitions for Urban Dictionary.
Yeah, sex moves.
Yeah.
Anywho, Hall also detailed some experiences in the documentary Walking with the Tall Whites, which is on Amazon if you want to watch it. Now, but Charles James Hall, I don't know why I keep switching his
name. I don't know either.
Charles James Hall was stationed at Nellis Air Force Base in Nevada from 1964 to 1965 as a sort of like meteorologist. He would be stationed at various weather stations out in the Mojave Desert and have to report and catalog various wind and weather patterns for military aircraft tests. And if Fallout New Vegas tells us anything, Hall likely had to fight off rad scorpions and raiders while he was there.
Art, that's cute. how you ignore your depressing reality and pretend to live in your fantastical video game worlds. That's so funny.
I'm the courier.
Anyway, Hall claims his real purpose was to work as a liaison between the U.S. government and a small colony of aliens known as the Tall Whites, who were given a section of land by the U.S. government called Area 54 in the Mojave Desert. And if there's one thing we know about the U.S. government, it's that when they give you a deal on a piece of land, it'll stand the test of time. Oh. Wait.
Oh, no.
That's not right.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. Well, when Hall, what Hall believes he was sort of a get to know humans training dummy. Hall thinks that he was a sort of get to know humans training dummy for the alien species. They should have signed us up for the task.
Yeah.
Could have shown these little alien fellers how a couple of real chads rock and roll,
oh,
baby.
You know it.
Come here, little alien feller. Let me show you how to break into churches and replace all the crucifixes with hand-drawn pictures of Danny DeVito.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's how we fucking rock and roll, aliens.
Give me an amen.
Now, Hall published the first volume of his Millennial Hospitality series 20 years after being discharged from the military, and he first presented the book as fiction, supposedly to protect the other people's identities who were involved in the stories. Hall was bashful about publishing his book at first, but his wife, after reading about these encounters, encouraged him to go public.
Aww.
And later, whether due to having no recognition at all or popularity, it could go honestly either way here.
Yeah.
Hall started to say the books were a fictionalized take on a true story, which I guess is like saying it's not true, but really it is.
Yeah.
So Hall started his military career with a tour of Vietnam. Then, according to him, he scored the highest ever recorded score on the math portion of the U.S. Air Force placement test. He says he only got one question wrong out of 500.
A lot of damn questions.
That's a lot of math questions. So after absolutely Sarah McLaughlin-ing the placement test, he was stationed at Nellis Air Force Base in the Mojave Desert, which is near the western U.S., if you're not familiar.
The young recruit Charles Hall attended a party at the Air Force Base one evening. One of the commanding officers stationed there, a major, had a gregarious and fun-loving wife who attended these parties with him. She enjoyed going up to all the soldiers and asking them for a dance and maybe to go back to her place for a good Sarah McLaughlin.
Oh, man. I will remember you.
Well, this particular evening, she approached Charles and asked him for a dance. And he said, "No, you're too old." And the major's wife stormed off.
Good God Almighty. Good God Almighty. That killed her. God is my witness, she is broken in half.
Little Jim Ross.
My God. My God. She had a husband.
The next day, Charles was called into the major's office, expecting to get his ass chewed out, or millennia hospitality'd rather, for his insubordination. But instead, the major thanked him for not dancing with his eternally intoxicated wife. Charles was the only man to turn her down for a dance. Therefore, Charles was a man who could be trusted. Charles proved his worth again later on by guiding six F-105 fighters through a blind landing on a training mission using nothing more than his extensive knowledge of the wind. Which, I mean, I think Charles Hall was a character in Pocahontas, right?
Charles is definitely starting to sound like a sageful anthropomorphic tree from a Disney movie. That's right.
We can fly with all the colors of the mountains. We can land with all the knowledge of the wind.
Tell me, does the wolf cry when the moon full moon? And can you hear the quiet spirit's grin? I can paint with all the colors of the rainbow, okay?
Oh my God, Charles Hall. Anyway, Charles' reward for his non-cucking his bossness and wind expertise?
Yeah.
Well, he was assigned / allowed to do the weather readings at the various weather shacks out on the ranges in the desert. Around this time, Hall started.
Ooh, la, la.
Yeah, you score almost a perfect score on the Air Force.
Ooh, baby.
Math placement test. What do you get to do? Weather.
Boy, we got to put this guy out as far away from everybody else as possible, where he's by himself doing minimally important work.
Around this time, Hall started to hear stories about a horse that haunted the desert where the weather stations were located, called Range 4 Harry. The story went that back in 1954, Range 4 Harry was a horse that had gotten too close to an atomic bomb test blast, but not close enough that the horse died. Just close enough to be badly burned.
Yeah.
And so now, on warm summer nights, this beaming beast of burden prowls the desert near Range 4 and just sorts of glows creepily and maybe does other stuff to people, but mostly just glows.
I'll never be your atomic beast of burden.
And I just want to clarify something here, because I was also, well, maybe this is just me, but I was also slightly confused about some stuff here, and I just want to clear it up. So Range, I thought Range 4 was like F-O-R. It's not. It's the number 4. Range 4. Range number 4.
Right.
Range 4 is a location. There are four ranges. Like, these are like big areas of empty land where the military could test bombs and fly planes and shit and do whatever they want. Just a big range.
There's lots of these in the desert, bunk funkers, yeah. Like out west, where it's just like, they like literally test bombs and stuff. Like, yeah. They'll drop bombs from airplanes, yeah. And things like
unused
that.
Unused desert landscape.
It's just miles and miles of empty desert.
So there's range number 1, range number 2, number 3, and this is number 4. This is where you can find Range 4 Harry. I just wanted to clear that up. Anyway, back to Range 4 Harry, who was a ghost, but also actually not really a ghost.
Oh.
Because according to legend, anyone who got near Range 4 Harry got badly burned or attacked. And even then, some who got close and lived to tell the tale said that Range 4 Harry wasn't even a real horse, but was actually a tall human. Was tall with a human-like face and big blue eyes. Oh, now we're getting somewhere.
Oh, baby. But, I mean, what gives?
Nah, I don't know.
Charles Hall's story is fiction, but it's fact. Range 4 Harry is a horse, but it's not. I'm getting mixed signals here. The only thing I like mixed are my salads.
Andy, I'm not falling for your toss my salad ruse again. Calm down and sit on your toilet.
But apparently, I'm not wearing pants already. Just go with
I'm
it.
I'm not tossing your salad. Anyway.
Frasier would.
Apparently, you definitely smell like scrambled eggs. What is it?
A lot of sulfur. Toss salads.
Scrambled eggs.
And scrambled eggs, yeah.
Apparently, the men stationed at Nellis believed in Range 4 Harry so fervently that many of them refused to carry out their duties alone. So this horse, or not, this thing had them freaked out.
Well, let's tell some Range 4 Harry stories and see why they were so scared of this big, bad, radioactive not horse. Another soldier named Dwight said he saw Range 4 Harry, and it gave off a fluorescent light that, while soft, would still hurt your eyes.
All right.
Yeah, okay.
Because it's kind of scary.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you looked at it long enough, that would be, like, kind of unnerving. Maybe.
Right, a little bit.
Anyway, another airman named Rigby also saw, these are all characters from TV shows, aren't they?
Yeah.
Dwight.
Next will
Rigby.
Be Mordecai.
Yeah. Another airman named Rigby also saw Range 4 Harry and afterward refused to go out into the desert alone and unarmed. Okay. Seems sure. More like a personal preference than anything Range 4 Harry did.
Okay.
What about this? Another soldier named Jackson was one of the first to see Range 4 Harry and noticed that it wasn't a horse, but a humanoid. Okay. That's something.
Okay.
Now, according to Jackson, Range 4 Harry looked like a human with chalk white hair and was thin with blue eyes. But he said that Range 4 Harry looked at him the same way a horse looks at a human. You know how horses always be giving us humans those looks? You know that horse look?
Dude, horses only want one thing, and it's disgusting.
Yeah. Apples. Yuck. Also sex. Anywho, Jackson actually got close enough to speak to Range 4 Harry, and when he introduced himself and stated his rank and stuff, the horse, who isn't actually a horse, but is actually a tall white, I mean, spoiler alert, I guess, said, quote, "You may call me Range 4 Harry," end quote. So I guess that's how we got the name Range 4 Harry. Another airman named Zimmerman didn't have as cordial of an interaction with old Range 4 Harry. Charles Hall heard that Range 4 Harry burned Zimmerman badly, so he checked Zimmerman's medical records, and Hall says he saw pictures of bone-deep burns similar to those caused by radiation exposure, and with those pictures were Zimmerman's statements that he had been burned by a radioactive horse. Well, I've been through the desert on a radioactive horse. It felt good to be out of the rain. in the desert, you can say your name, cause otherwise Range for Harry is there to give you some pain. La 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 la.
But Charles didn't give a rat's ass about this radioactive horse and or weird humanoid and or tall white alien.
I mean, one thing you're going to learn about Charles Hall is that he is a man with no fucks to give. He goes hard 100% of the time.
Yeah.
You'll see, it's going to be very clear. He's hard and he rushes in, guns a-blazing, dick swinging. He does it all. This is the Charles Hall fucking story.
He is here to chew ass and eat bubble gum, and he is all out of bubble gum.
So he's going
to
chew ass. Charles Hall.
Okay, and let's be honest. None of those stories were especially scary. They're just kind of stories. I mean, sure, maybe getting burned radioactively is kind of scary.
Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah.
But otherwise, you'd just be kind of like, oh, yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, that's weird.
What actually happened, though?
So Charles Hall had no problem taking over his duty as a weather reporter. So Hall was in charge of setting off weather balloons at various stations and ranges and recording the patterns, numbers, etc., what have you. Hall discovered that out in the desert, there were over 1,000 weather balloons from the previous 7 years, unused and still in their original packaging. The previous men
mint
sent...
Mint condition weather balloons.
Mint. Oh, chef's kiss.
Yeah. Charles Hall should have sold these because these would have gone for, I mean, so much above market value because they were such mint condition.
The previous men sent out to do this job were too afraid. They drove out there, threw the balloons on the ground, and drove off.
These guys have the same work ethic as me. This is exactly every job I've ever done.
And you don't have a radioactive horse.
No, I don't have an excuse other than being just pure laziness.
Hall's training supervisor told him that no one ever actually did the job. They just made up the data because they were all too afraid to go out to Range 4 and encounter Range 4 Harry. I think Charles Hall's exact quote was, just tell the government the number 4. They love the number 4. So if they say, hey, what's the wind speed? 4. 4 whatever. Knots. I don't know what you measure wind in. Miles per hour?
Yeah, probably knots.
But Hall insisted on doing the job the right way. So he actually went to the stations at Range 4. And that's when he first encountered the tall whites. But what just the frick are these tall whites, huh, Andy?
Well, for once, we're not talking about BYU's basketball team.
Oh, we're not?
No, for once, we're not.
Oh, wow.
I mean, so put all your Jimmer Fredette notes away because we're not talking about BYU basketball greats.
Chicago Bulls own Jimmer Fredette. He was on the team for a hot minute.
Yeah, he was there. We are talking about a race of alien beings. Their skin isn't white like we are white. They are, like, actually white, like literally white, like living room walls white or Snow White. Well, I mean, Snow White was white, but not like Snow White, like chalk white.
Yeah, chalk.
Not white like Snow White was white, but like white like snow is white.
Yeah. Think of chalk.
Chalk. And what exactly are they doing here on Earth? Well, they use our planet as kind of like a rest stop. And honestly, it makes sense. We would be the intergalactic rest stop.
We would.
A place to come and take a shit, maybe have, pay for sex.
Stretch your legs. Go to a broken vending machine and kick it.
Yeah, get beef jerky. Their home world, the Tall White's home world, is warmer than ours, and that's why they live in the Mojave Desert here on Earth. However, the Tall White's entered an agreement with the U.S. government who gave them the land in the Mojave Desert. The Tall Whites only enter into arrangements that benefit themselves. Very shrewd. For example, they wouldn't share their spacecraft engine technology with us, but they would share designs for other tech. This was because the Tall Whites use our planet as a sort of garage or pit stop where they could refuel and repair their spaceships. So they needed us to have some parts of their tech explained and built so we could craft it for them if they needed repairs. That's a smart deal. One time, Charles Hall saw one of the damaged Tall White spacecraft as it came in. To him, it was obvious that it had some kind of damage, likely meteor damage, and would obviously need high-grade titanium to be fixed, obviously. Naturally. Yep. You know, you look at it, you go, yep. That there needs some classic high-grade titanium is all. Fix her up good as new. Hall looked through the windows of the ship and saw the interior, which had corridors like a cruise ship, and the walls inside were damaged. And so was the buffet. So they needed aluminum, titanium, and fiber optics cables. See, the genius of the Tall Whites deal with the U.S. is that the people fabricating these materials didn't need to know it was for an alien spacecraft. You dig? But the aliens get their parts, and the U.S. gets to learn how to make high-grade titanium and other dope stuff. These repairs took more than 6 months, so now you understand why the Tall Whites were just hanging around here on Earth in their Area 54.
Now, the Tall Whites aren't like your typical gray aliens, who will come up a little bit later. They are totally uninterested in abductions and anal probes.
Too bad.
Shame about one of those things.
Yeah, unfortunate.
But let's learn some facts about the Tall Whites that we learned over the years from our friend Charles Hall. Now, the Tall Whites, their brains work 7 times faster than ours. These are incredibly smart aliens. It's probably why they're able to pull a fast one over us, make such good deals. They benefit themselves.
Yeah.
They average between 6 and 7 feet in height and upwards of 9 feet. The Tall Whites go through 3 stages of development in their life cycle. The young Tall Whites are the most reactionary and will snap at you. Ooh, they're so feisty. They're usually around 3 feet tall. Then they have a midlife 6 to 7 foot period where they may travel back to their home planet, which has less gravity than ours. That's so they can then grow to that 6 foot, 7 foot kind of height. Then they eventually grow to 9 feet tall, in which case the young Tall Whites actually will be used to help support these late stage Tall Whites. Otherwise, they start to droop.
Yeah, just like people. Like us.
Tall Whites live for about 800 years, and halfway through their life, they hit a growth spurt that never stops until they die from organ failure.
That's the only cause of death.
They literally just start growing until they die.
Yeah, okay.
They have beautiful, wispy, long white hair that is much thinner than human hair. And they have large blue eyes that sit on the sides of their heads. Mm. However, they are still humanoid looking and can actually pass as human. And Tall Whites frequently dress up as humans and hit the Vegas Strip. Oh, we kid you not. They love Las Vegas. They love gambling.
Oh, man. You know, let's see. Tall, blue eyes, thin, wispy hair. Loves Vegas. Frank Sinatra was a Tall White.
It might be true, Andy. Old Blue Eyes himself, maybe he didn't ever die. Maybe he went back to his
back
home
to his
planet,
home planet
to grow to 6, 7 feet, 9 feet tall before he died of organ failure.
Yeah, probably so.
The Tall Whites have mechanical boxes on their clothes that they use to translate English into their language and vice versa. They are not psychic, but they can transmit images into other people's minds, and the Tall Whites speak on a frequency that we are unable to hear. But there are a few sounds they make in their language, which we can actually hear, and they differ between, like, Charles Hall always describes them as the beautiful singing of a morning lark, which is a bird, and the short stabs of a barking dog.
Yeah.
So you've got a real spectrum here of sounds that we can actually hear, but most we can't. They have excellent hearing, on par with a dog, and they also run hella fast, reaching speeds of up to 35 miles per hour. Can you believe that?
Whew.
Usain Bolt, the fastest human, can get up to like 20-something, right?
Yeah. Yeah, these...
28?
These aliens are tearing up the salt flats out there, I'll tell you that much.
Oh, that's right. You better not let...
I don't want to catch myself on a quarter mile with them. Ooh, baby.
Old Chuck Yeager better not be out there. He's going to race some tall
Chuck
whites.
Chuck fucking Yeager, he'll get him.
Oh, yeah. But don't bring up animals around the Tall Whites because the Tall Whites won't get it. According to them, allowing other animals to exist on our planet with us doesn't make any logical sense to them. They said that we, as in humans, interacted with other animals on our planet much more than other species. In their view, a species becomes intelligent. Like, they've been all over the galaxy and they see species like us become intelligent. Mm-hmm. And then when we do, we kill off all the other creatures, which could be later become a threat. It's like,
we're getting to it, Tall Whites, okay?
Yeah.
Like, just because we didn't do it instantly doesn't mean we're not doing it.
We're taking care of the rhinos, all right?
Right.
Huge threat.
Huge threat.
Tigers, we got them.
Got them on the ropes, that's for sure.
Polar bears. Who cares? Yeah, yeah. Shit.
Where are they going to live in a few years? Yeah.
Now, some Tall Whites can be very aloof and skittish and actually won't hesitate to use force to get away if they feel threatened or in danger. And they can be dangerous because they have lasers that can shoot you. And they have other instruments that will freeze you in place.
Yeesh.
I know.
Scary.
For example, they have a small pencil-thin instrument and interacts with ions in our bodies and can freeze us or stun us through the use of microwaves.
Ooh. The tall whites are very fragile, and they're wary of us because humans can be a bit brutish. I know I can. According to Charles Hall, you need to be careful around the tall whites and declare each and every movement you make in front of them. Art and I will now demonstrate proper etiquette when interacting with a tall white.
whoa, hey, what are you doing there?
I'm just standing up here, tall white.
Whoa, what are you doing there? What are you doing?
Just moving my arms. Unzipping my pants here. Okay, taking off my underwear. All right, now I'm furiously masturbating.
And you get the picture. You see, the tall whites are much weaker than us, but they are much quicker than us and have lightning quick reflexes. But as we said, some of the tall whites are friendly, but they can also be really arrogant. When other people in the military first encountered the tall whites, they freaked out and screamed, "Aliens! Oh my God, aliens!" And this would have freaked out the tall whites, who probably attacked the humans out of fear. This is exactly why Charles Hall was chosen for this mission. Charles Hall is a very matter-of-fact, no-nonsense, monotone man. If he was a superhero, he'd be monotone man. He was perfectly boring enough to extensively interact with these aliens. I mean, he's the most Midwestern guy you'll ever meet.
He's just so unoffensive.
Yeah, like completely, I mean, like we make a lot of jokes about me being like mayonnaise. Like he literally is like, he's like mayonnaise, but like not tangy at all.
No.
No lemon juice in that mayonnaise. So here's some more tall white facts. Many tall whites have families. One which we'll mention later, called the teacher, had a daughter named the Butterfly, a name which amused her because they did not have butterflies on their planet.
Now, speaking of their planet, we don't know where their home planet is, but Hall estimates it is 105 light years away in a southern hemisphere star. The tall whites also had the best tech, and their starships were the most impressive and came from further away than the Greys or other alien species. Here's an excerpt from one of Hall's books on discussing the tall white home planet. Quote, "A ripple of emotion passed through the crowd as I mentioned the star Arcturus, some 36 light years away. After a short pause, the older lady asked with some surprise, 'Teacher, does Charlie know where we come from?'" End quote. Tall white crafts enter on a full moon when the sun, the earth, and the moon are lined up, and they enter our gravity in line with the Earth's rotation, and let Earth's gravity kind of pull them in as the planet rotates away from the ship. It's a smart way to do it, because otherwise you would get stuck, and you'd have to keep spending fuel as the Earth is rotating in the up or the other way, and you'd be all fucked up. Charles Hall says he heard Earth military generals talking with tall white generals about the existence of other Earth-like planets out in the galaxy where there was no intelligent life yet, and that the tall whites had wanted to put bases on these planets but couldn't because these Earth-like planets were colder than the actual Earth by a bit, and the tall whites didn't like that because they only like hot planets.
Oh, yeah, they like it hot. That's why they like Vegas.
They love it hot. So the tall whites were going to give these planets to us humans in exchange for the humans building a base for the tall whites to put their spacecraft so they could refuel and repair and probably hang out in a sauna.
Yeah, for sure.
The generals were like, hell yeah, dude, fuck yeah, let's fucking do it. But they wanted their own starships and like space propulsion systems to go out to these planets so they could start fucking colonizing them, because you know we would.
Oh, we would.
But the tall whites were crafty. Oh, no, they were like, no. We'll be keeping the intergalactic travel, thank you very much, Earth. Essentially making us humans reliant on them and their systems to go out to these new planets. Very sneaky, very smart.
It's good business.
Yep.
We told you, Bunk Funkers, they only make deals that benefit themselves.
We'll take you out to the planets. You build the bases for us.
Yeah.
And then we'll use them as pit stops. You can have the planet. We don't give a shit.
Yeah, yeah. Smart. All right, Bunk Funkers. We know a little bit about Charles Hall. We know a bit about the tall whites. Time to tell you all some of his stories of his encounters with these strange alien visitors. Charles may have been up to the task of doing weather reports, but after his first encounter with the tall whites, he soon realized his true purpose for being out in the desert. The story goes like this. Charles Hall learned from a fellow soldier that his weather reports weren't even being used, and they would be thrown out as soon as they came in. So, naturally, he was kind of like, what the fuck, dude? Except Charles probably wouldn't say something, wouldn't say it like that. He'd probably say something like, oh, I just thought that was odd, you know? But one day, he was out doing his weather duties, important or not, when he spotted a small white creature hiding behind some purple sage off a ways, away up a valley near a trail, and the creature seemed to be peeking out at him. So Charles called to the creature, asking if it needed any help, because Charles, at the time, thought this might have been a lost little girl. Well, after he called out to her, it ran off, and so Charles pursued the girl. Charles recalls hearing the sounds of the meadowlark coming closer and closer down the valley he was in as he called out to the white creature slash girl. Then he heard a loud, shrill shriek, and the creature stopped. Hall eventually cornered the creature and saw before him a 3-foot-tall, pure, chalky white little girl. She was much thinner than an average little girl and had eyes molded into the side of her head. And her hands only had 4 fingers, which were also short, sharp claws. Charles realized something weird was up with this little girl and that she clearly was not human. So he just sort of said, all right, well, if you're lost or need water or whatever, I'm the weatherman over there and I can help you. And then he turned his back to her, partially to curb his own fear, and went back down the trail.
Charles hightailed it back to his weather shack. The weather shack, baby. But however, he felt as if he was being followed. And when he turned around, he saw another tall white creature. This one was around 6 feet tall, running towards him. I mean, that's a scary sight.
Yeah.
This thing can run fast. You see a big white blur.
Yeah, imagine you see a cheetah running at you. You're going to be scared.
So Charles just kind of sat in his weather station for about 30 minutes trying to shake the eerie feeling of being watched by something. Whatever the tall white creature running after him was, and then he just sort of drove back to the base. Charles tried to calm himself, saying that this was probably just some undiscovered species of seagull out in the desert.
Yep.
But before Charles got back to the base, he said he felt the creature's presence thanking him for finding the child, which freaked him out so much he had to pull over and vomit.
Yeah. You know? We've all been there.
We've all been there.
We've all been thanked for something we did and just had to vomit immediately because it freaked us out.
Projectile. So when he got back to the base cook, Smokey, had a thermos of coffee, eggs, toast, and bacon waiting for him on the order of the base general, who was somehow aware of what had just transpired between Charles and these creatures. Smokey, the cook, also told Charles, again, a message from the general. As you know, the military... Famous
chain of command. Yes. Everything goes through the cook.
Yeah. That is the commanding officer on a base is a cook.
Well, I can only imagine if you're the cook and your name is Smokey, you're just constantly smoking cigarettes while you're cooking. So all the food probably has like ash in it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So Smokey told Charles a message from the general that because of Charles's calmness, kindness, that he need not be afraid of any white creatures out on the range ever again. And after this first encounter with the tall whites, Charles started encountering more of this alien species. One day out on Range 3, Charles was at his weather station reporting back to the base the weather patterns. And I just want to make a note here. I guess at this point, Charles is aware that maybe his work is completely unnecessary, but that he's still doing it anyway, right? Like, he knows.
Yeah. He's been told that nobody's reading what you're doing.
Yeah, and that, like... Maybe he doesn't have an idea yet that he's out there to actually interact with the aliens, but he's interacted with them.
Right.
So anyway, he hears over the comms what sounded like static, but felt as if someone was listening in on him. So he hung up and looked out the window, the weather station window. He saw another tall white female in a tight nylon ski suit with boots that looked like it was intently listening on the conversation with the Nellis base. Hall recalls the sunlight reflecting off her suit, and it was so bright it hurt his eyes. But a few seconds later, the tall white realized that Hall was staring at her, so she took off running.
Honestly, it is not hard to empathize with Charles here. Plenty of women find us staring at them and then take off running.
True, very true.
Happened a lot. Anyway, Hall got up and went to look out another window to catch a better glimpse at her. But then he saw Range 4 Harry himself stand up from behind a sagebrush, and as Hall puts it, he wanted me to know he was there and that she wasn't alone. So Hall, in order to defuse the situation, which he felt was getting tense, you know, like Range 4 Harry was sizing him up, just kind of stayed still until the lady left and Range 4 Harry communicated with body language that both he and Charles didn't know what the lady wanted. So Charles went back into his weather station and read a book.
Wow. What a high-octane alien encounter. I mean, which book was it? The suspense is killing me.
I just had an encounter with two alien creatures, so I just decided, I'm going to get some light reading.
I better go read a book.
But this was the beginning of a beautiful friendship with Range 4 Harry. One night, a few days after their... I like how it ends, too, where they're just like, they just shrug both at each other.
Yeah.
And then he's like, I guess I'll go read a book.
Range 4 Harry communicated with body language that said they both didn't know what that other tall white... Women, am I right? It doesn't matter what species.
Yep. So one night, a few days after this encounter, Hall was asleep in his bunk when he heard a noise at the bunk entrance that sounded like one of the generals. You know, generals have a very distinct sound. So Hall immediately shot up in alertness because you know how the general is a much higher rank than him. But what is
general insurance?
Yeah, yeah. Call. I can't remember what he says. Yeah. But what Charles Hall saw was not only the general and some other high-ranking officers, but also old Range 4 Harry peeking in, looking at him. Hall said he felt a wave of fear wash over him, and the best thing he could do was just sit there because, hey, if Range 4 Harry wanted him dead, he could have him dead already. And those are Charles's words, not us like defending Range 4 Harry's abilities or whatever. Like, yeah, we don't, as far as we know, Range 4 Harry maybe can burn you, but we don't know.
So we'll get into it with some of Range 4 Harry's abilities, but
right.
Yeah.
So anyway, Range 4 Harry walks up to Hall and puts a square device against his temple, which Hall says half hypnotized him. Like Hall still had to take orders. He was under their control, but he could remember what was happening to him. So they marched him out of his bunk and decided to put Hall in the petroleum oils and liquid shed, which is probably my favorite shed, in case he panicked and all he could see was bare walls. The general says that they wanted to show them, quote unquote, the rest of the base. And then like a half hour later, Range 4 Harry takes Hall back towards his bunk. But then Hall suddenly isn't hypnotized anymore, and he was going to call out for a bird colonel to help him. But he thought, again, the safest option was to just go back to his bunk and go to sleep. Man, yet another fucking action-packed thrill ride of an alien encounter. And what an ending! Oh, man! He saw an alien, the alien hypnotized him and put him in a shed while it went and did other stuff. And then it came back and he went to sleep. Oh, baby. Sell that to Hollywood.
That is what is, that's what I'm saying, Andy. That's what's missing from most TVs and movies. Characters who make rational and often mundane choices. I mean, Charles Hall jumping out of bed, going on a sneak mission to like find out what happened to him, stalking the aliens, trying to break into the general's office to get info. It's fucking lame, dude. I don't want to watch a movie like that.
No way.
Character makes an interesting choice that puts them into a uncomfortable position where they have to go on a journey?
Yeah, no
way. Give me the safest and most logical option, like being like, well, that was weird. I'm going to go back to sleep.
Yeah. That's the right decision.
Like, I don't know why in The Matrix, why Neo wasn't just like, I'm not taking pills from a stranger. I'm going to go back to my comfortable office job.
No, thank you. A pill?
Yeah.
What's
not happening,
in this
buddy.
Thing?
But there was some fun to be had. The tall whites also occasionally pranked Charles.
Oh,
Charles apparently vomits a lot.
One of his things.
Like, that's his reaction to a lot of these freaky alien encounters. And the tall whites do tend to stalk and toy with servicemen, as we described. And they instill feelings of fear in people, which I guess leads to Charles Hall vomiting a lot. The tall whites would make parachutes and weird plastic pieces follow him and float around the range. And this all made Charles very sick.
Just puking up a storm.
Damn, what a friggin' prank, dude.
Oh, man. Oh,
my God.
Oh, my God, dude. Friggin' got him. I pull this prank all the time. Most of the time, I don't even gotta do nothing. Just a sight of me alone is enough to make most people vomit. I don't even need a parachute. Jeez Louise. Oh, they just puke.
So friggin' funny, dude.
So friggin' funny. Good friggin' prank.
So besides rage for Harry, Charles Hall had numerous encounters with another tall white named the Teacher. The Teacher was a high-ranking tall white who was 6 feet tall. And from his interactions with her and Range for Harry, he eventually learned, hey, these aliens ain't so different from us. The Teacher's main job was to, well, teach the tall white children all she could about Earth. And so Charles kind of got roped into this as that, cut in half human body with detachable organs, which we all had in our high school biology class or in our bedroom closets.
Or that sleeps next to us at night.
Yeah, we all had it. For example, one time Hall was out at range 3 looking through some kind of weather device, which we're going to call a weather scope, to look at his weather balloon. And suddenly a tall white female came up behind him and leaned over his shoulder to look into the weather scope with a smile on her face. So Hall was like,
whatever,
and finished his work. And then, which again is pointless. And then when he was done, saw the tall white off a ways just standing there smiling at him. She was wearing a helmet and suit as well, and apparently she was floating, and the suit gave her the power to levitate. The helmets, by the way, could link the thoughts of the tall whites with other helmet wearers. Charles Hall thought he was hallucinating, and as he repeats constantly throughout the film, walking with the tall whites, was having a
brain malfunction.
So he just started talking to the tall white female and asked her if she wanted to look at his weatherscope again. That's kind of the end of that story, but there's an interesting point here in that Charles frequently didn't believe what he was really seeing. He describes it in a very matter-of-fact way where he says,
hell, maybe my brain is just playing double tricks on me. I can't really be talking to a 6-foot alien right now.
This matter-of-factness about Charles often lends credence to his claims.
Now here's another teacher encounter. One day the teacher's daughter, named, as we said earlier, the Butterfly, went missing near Range 1, and the base asked Charles to release weather balloons every hour from Range 1, which was unusual for Hall because there weren't really any planes out there that needed to have the weather measured for, but Hall believes that these orders actually came from the Pentagon, so he did them. Also, he kind of understands that his work is pointless at this point, but he did it anyway. It came from the Pentagon.
Yeah.
Then the balloons were used to help locate the lost girl so she could get through the sagebrush and find her way home. Eventually, through the use of the balloons, Hall was able to track down the location of the Butterfly. And much like me at any party ever I've ever attended, mm-hmm. afterwards, Hall was like, all right, I'm done here. I'm a ghost. I'm a ghost out of here. Just leave without saying goodbye. But the teacher and the Butterfly were so grateful, they wanted to thank Charles Hall in person. But Hall was too freaked out by these tall, milky whites, so he rudely drove off in his truck without letting them thank him.
At which point did he vomit in that story?
It's probably coming up. And now the generals, the Earth generals, were like, God damn it, Charles. And the tall white leaders were like, come on, dude, just take our friggin' gratitude. I mean, Charles pissed off humans and aliens alike here.
God damn. They picked the wrong guy for this job.
Jeez Louise. So the next day, they sent Hall out to Range 1 again to launch some balloons. And then when he was finished, all the tall whites surrounded him and blocked off all of his exits. Then a few different military generals showed up and decided to hypnotize Hall using the tall whites' device. And then the teacher and her daughter thanked him. And then all the tall whites except Range 4 Harry, who chilled, you know, all the tall whites left except for Range 4 Harry, who chilled for a bit because at this point, him and Hall were kind of homies.
Right.
And Range 4 Harry then made Hall sing a song and said, when the song is finished, you're done being hypnotized. And then he left as well. And then when Hall was done singing the song, his hypnosis ended. From then on, Hall was known as Teacher's Pet by all the other tall whites.
Nice, Charles. I used to be a teacher's pet, too. I would curl up in my AP history teacher, Mr. O'Hennessy's lap and say, I'm your widow kitty. Pet me. Meow, meow. And he tried to push me off, but I would just shove my tiny pink butthole in his face. I transferred schools a lot.
You had some troubles as a youth.
Couldn't stay in one place for too long.
Yeah.
Anywho, one time, Hall asked the teacher why the tall whites would ever be afraid of a guy like him. I mean, Charles was a young serviceman, but these were alien beings with the power of hypnosis and lightning quick reflexes. Well, she said because Earth is his planet and he knows how it works there. They were not from here, so they were freaked out by everything. It was all so new. If Charles needed help, even with something trivial, he could ask another human. But them? They are very weak. Even a bumblebee sting could potentially be fatal. Yet, despite having saved the teacher's child and being the teacher's pet, the tall whites would not think twice about executing Hall if he somehow hurt one of the alien children. Here's an excerpt from Millennial Hospitality of a tall white mother talking to her son. "All right," replied his mother. "You may join the teacher's pet project. Remember, do not get too close to him. And remember, if anything ever goes wrong, if Charlie ever touches you, I will ask your Uncle Harry to kill him." Jeez. Just when you thought you were getting chummy with these aliens, huh?
Jeez, Louise. Jeez,
man.
Charles Hall just wants to pick up one of these little alien babies, bounce him on his knee a little bit.
Yeah, they're going to murder him.
Fucking murder him.
Here's another excerpt from Millennial Hospitality detailing how super serious the tall whites were about allowing Hall near their children and their plans. Then the guard said forcefully, "You know that if anything goes wrong with this plan, we can kill you anytime we want to." Standing my ground, still shaking in fear, I replied, "Yes, but I haven't given you any reason to kill me. Anyway, you haven't killed me yet, so you are probably not going to." The guard smiled and replied, "You are quite right. We could have killed you in the shack the other night if we wanted to." Then he turned and walked back to the procession. Stopping for a minute near the shorter woman, he said, "See? Now he knows for sure that we will kill him if anything ever goes wrong."
Oh, Charles. So how did Charles keep a level head when he's interacting with these aliens who flat out said they wouldn't think twice about vaporizing his ass if he ever so much as farted out of place? Seriously, these guys are very skittish, aloof.
Yeah.
They're freaked out. Charles Hall rips a little toot. They think it's a fucking sign of aggression. Blasts his head off.
Yeah. Not a good time to use your whoopee cushion, Charles Hall.
That's right. Hall says he would sing Rick Nelson's It's Up to You to help calm himself whenever he felt scared encountering the tall whites.
It's up.
It's up.
To you.
To you.
Because I've done everything I can. I hope.
I hope.
That you,
that you
will say that I'm your loving man. Make up,
make up
your mind,
your mind,
and do what you're gonna do. Well, you know how I feel, so I'm leaving it up to you.
Up to you. Paul describes how it was always tense meeting the tall whites because they were always fucking armed to the gills. These guys were packing heat.
Oh, baby. Were
they I mean, ever. This guy's main job was to teach these aliens how human tech worked occasionally. I mean, also he would do his weather balloons.
Yeah.
But so Hall would be sitting there trying to demonstrate how a friggin' diesel engine worked. Meanwhile, the tall whites are posted up at each door armed with alien tech ready to blast his nuts off as he so much as breathed the wrong way and they took it as a threat. I think you'd vomit too under that kind of pressure, Andy.
I'd vomit for a lot of reasons.
That's true. Mostly because you're like a dog and you eat things that you're not supposed to.
Yeah, I eat too much grass and poop.
But eventually this nightmare did end for Charles Hall. As he eventually left the military, he met his wife, Marie Therese, and they got married after 5 months of dating and had a big family with six kids, Andy. Six kids.
Wow,
big family.
Charles Hall's got some swimmers.
Oh, baby. Big, beautiful family. Congrats. As we mentioned, Charles in secret began to write a book about his experience with the tall whites. He tried to cover it up from his wife, saying it was just his memoirs, but his wife encouraged him to publish it. And while Charles changed the human names in his book, he didn't change any of the tall whites' names in his books.
Oh.
Because he figures if a tall white wanted to sue him, they would have to appear in court. And as he puts it, I win either way.
But wait, there's more. We learned a few other random tidbits about the tall whites and other alien species from Charles' encounters. Charles also encountered the classic gray aliens, such as the one seen in Roswell. The grays arrived on Earth first out of all the alien species. The grays think of this zone of the galaxy as their so-called homeland, and as long as nothing happens here that would threaten their children, then they don't really give a fuck. They're easygoing. The arrangement the Greys have with the U.S. is that they are allowed to abduct us for their human-alien hybrid programs in exchange for weaponry. So, I mean, the Greys are cool.
Grays are cool, but they're also abducting us, but they're giving us badass weapons. Mm-hmm. And so they're, and, you know.
But they are splicing us with aliens, so that's cool. Mm-hmm. Charles also encountered an alien species called the Norwegians.
With 24 teeth.
With 24 teeth. Is with 24 teeth part of the name?
I have no fucking clue.
They have 24 teeth.
We just got to, I mean, we have to separate it from the actual Norwegians.
Yeah, the Yeah, it's weird that their names would be Norwegians because they're not from Norway, probably.
No.
So the Norwegians with 24 teeth, they have 24 teeth. Their home planet is likely closer by. They might be from a planet near Barnard's star, which is 5 3/4 light years away. The Earth was a better place, and they thought our sun was better, so that's why they came here. They come from a planet which is half iced over. Not sure which half. their sun is a red star and would shoot massive flares, and then the Norwegians with 24 teeth would have to burrow underground to avoid the flares. So, hectic life. Their tech just barely got them through space. So these poor Norwegians with 24 teeth, they're struggling.
Yeah.
It's a rough life.
The tall whites, again, number one in tech.
Yeah.
And they won't share that shit with anybody.
Right.
They're coming the longest distance.
Right. Very proprietary.
Oh, yeah.
Grays, middle of the road, doing well. Nothing wrong.
Right.
But Norwegians with 24 teeth, rough.
Yeah.
Also, the tall whites may have lost a war with the Anunnaki at one point, and were not fond of the Greys, according to Hall.
I am quite certain that the tall whites and the short Greys hate each other. I am quite certain that the tall whites would never permit the short Greys to come anywhere near their base areas or near their housing areas or anywhere that their children might be playing, etc.
Apparently, the teacher also made some comments to Hall regarding the tall white disdain for the Greys.
Yikes. Hey, wow, maybe these aliens really are just like us.
Yeah. They hate other aliens.
Yeah,
like we
causing
hate other
wars.
People.
Yeah. Well, what about the tall whites today? Are they still here? I mean, Charles hasn't seen them since 1967, but he believes that they are still here and that other people have reported seeing them. In fact, Charles Hall put locations in his books, first published in 2002, before Google and Google Maps. So he put these locations / coordinates in his books before, like before any realizing that there would be a future, a near future, where you could search these locations on the internet and pull up a map. Well, if you actually search Charles Hall's locations on Google Maps, you apparently can see white tic-tac/ silo-like shapes in the ground, which are believed to be tall white scout crafts.
Ooh.
So maybe they are still here. 2019 Pentagon UFO footage, which was footage of a UFO in 2004 and wouldn't be confirmed to be a UFO until 2019 when the footage was released. Well, according to Charles Hall, the ones with the white tic-tac shapes were authentic tall white scout crafts. The tall whites just can't quit Earth, baby.
Oh, baby.
That or they accrued some massive gambling debts in Vegas.
Oh, boy. Had to put their ships in hock.
That's right. That's right.
Rick Harrison's got a tall white ship in his pawn shop.
I know. He's going to give you some lesser grade titanium. That's the best he can do.
Yeah. Let me call a buddy of mine who's an expert in intergalactic craft.
Let me call Glip Glorp. He's a buddy of mine. He's an expert in intergalactic craft.
Well, I'd say this one is made of lighter titanium than usual.
You see, the different grades of titanium have to do with the oxidation process, you know. And so the oxidation process there is,
longest episode of Pawn Stars in history.
Yeah. Chumlee has fully just fallen asleep.
Just on the floor.
Yeah, drool cover. As for the skeptics, well, they just kind of say, hey, this guy made all this shit up. I mean, he literally said it was all fictional anyway. And that's that for them. I mean,
yeah.
Not much. What else are you going to say?
Yeah.
But what do you say, dear bunkfunkers? Have you ever encountered an alien species? Have you ever seen a tall white out in the Mojave Desert?
Perhaps, bunkfunkers, you haven't looked hard enough. Because just outside of Las Vegas, on a hot summer's day, there's a little shack. Is it reading the weather? Is it releasing balloons? No. But the two average whites there have made a deal with your mind tummies, and it benefits you the most.
Let them make a pit stop in your mind, tummy, and in return, they'll serve you up a heaping, helping, tall plate of the whole enchilada.
Mr. Bunker's Conspiracy Time podcast will be right back after this brief message.
It sure is chilly outside, Art.
Andy, where's your jacket?
Art, did you hear me? The wind chill is 30 below.
Andy, I think you have hypothermia.
You know, Art, with the horrific chilly weather outside,
the only thing that'll warm me up is listening to Andy and Art Debunked, available only on patreon.com/MrBunkerPod.
Are you seriously shilling our Patreon right now?
Oh, Art. Laughing at the antics of Andy and Art is all the warmth I need. And for just $5 a month, I get access to all the episodes of the show, behind-the-scenes updates, sneak peeks at episodes, and I can chat with Andy and Art on the Bunker Discord.
Andy, we need to get you to a hospital.
We need to get me to patreon.com/MrBunkerPod. So chilly. Oh, God. I'm chilled to the bone.
Welcome back, Bunk Bunkers. That was our research of the Tall Whites and
Tall Hats.
Charles Hall and Range 4 Harry and the whole kit caboodle.
The whole gang out there in the Mojave.
I fucking love this topic, man. I really do. This stuff is so fun. It's so
it's a great topic.
Stupid and fun.
It's
and
funny.
Just, it's just fun. It's fun for the whole family.
Charles Hall is the most fun, boring person that
I've
ever
come across. Oh, my God. He's so boring. Bunk Bunkers, walking with the Tall Whites is so boring. It's so boring. I'm sorry. I don't want to make fun of this nice old man, but it's so boring.
Yeah.
It's so boring.
He's just not a very engaging, like, presenter.
And I mean, I get it. Like, this was probably just like a passion project for like a person who is really into his story.
Yeah.
But there's like barely any graphics or like artist renditions of the creature. It's just, it's mostly just Charles Hall talking to a camera.
Yeah.
And saying these stories, which, again, these stories end so anticlimactically with Charles being like, well, and then I decided to brush my teeth. Of course, I use 25 seconds per quadrant of tooth and floss. Oh, about 6 to 7 feet of floss. You want to wrap it around your fingers, you know, so that then you can get ample space to get in between your teeth, and that way the floss isn't also sliding off your fingers, you know. So
wait, let me get this straight.
It's like, oh, fuck.
He does a minute and a half per tooth.
25 seconds. What are you talking about?
He said 25 seconds per quadrant of tooth.
Quadrant?
Yeah.
Quarter of the mouth.
Oh, quadrant of
25
mouth.
25 seconds here, 25 seconds
so
here.
So only does a minute and a half for the whole kitten. Okay. That,
you should do 2 minutes for your whole mouth.
2 minutes, yeah. Yeah.
Get an electric toothbrush.
Yeah, 30 seconds each.
Invest in one.
30 seconds.
Invest in one. It's good for you.
I do have one.
Good.
I have an Oral-B Pro. 1,000.
I'm a Sonicare guy.
Yeah, so. I like Oral-B. So.
There we go.
Agree to disagree, but.
Yeah, I guess so.
And then he also uses 6 to 7 feet of floss.
Okay. All right, fine.
The tall white thing was his floss. 6 feet tall. White string of floss.
Oh, my God. He's just so. You know, and a lot of his stories do make him kind of the hero, where it's like a lot. There's a lot more Charles Hall story. I mean, there's so many more stories. We only cherry picked a few. I mean, there's so many where it's like because of his he's just the best guy for the job. He's the most noble and the most just kind of level headed, even though he vomits a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, no, a lot of these stories are kind of congratulatory to him, where it's like, Charles, you are the paragon of calmness and level-headedness. Everybody else freaks out when they see these creatures out on the range, but you don't.
Right.
It's like that. It's that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Where it's like, but then, I mean, like his stories, though, it does seem like he's afraid.
Right. He's clearly freaked out by this stuff. I mean, he says brain malfunction. My brain having a malfunction here? Like his brain is malfunctioning. He thinks there's just no way I'm seeing what I'm seeing.
Yeah.
But that's why a lot of people kind of believe this guy, because he's got a Bob Lazar energy.
Yeah.
Where it's like, why would this dude publish these stories? Why would he put his name on this?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I know. Yeah, he does have kind of a Bob Lazar energy where it feels more credible.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm trying to think of a person who's like really not credible at all, but it's not coming to me. You know, but like Charles Hall comes off as like, you know, it's like, okay, I guess like speaking of Bob Lazar, like Jeremy Kenyon Lockyer Corbell.
Right.
Really seems about sensationalizing Bob Lazar's stories.
And weaponizing your curiosity.
Right. Weaponizing Bob Lazar's stories to sensationalize our genitals.
Whereas Charles Hall is maybe more about like,
he's more like weather ballooning his curiosity. Like he's just sort of lofting it up there and seeing what happens. You know, but he does have kind of a Bob Lazar energy. I don't feel like he comes off as, I mean, I know we talked about this and I know that ultimately I didn't find Bob Lazar to be like super credible, but
right.
Like if you, at first blush, Bob Lazar made me feel like, oh my God, this guy's got his hooks in me.
Right.
Like I'm believing Bob Lazar.
You're a Bob Lever.
I was a Bob Lever. I don't think there's any point where I was like, oh, Charles Hall is totally telling the truth
right.
about this.
Right.
You know, like it never, right. you know, it's like it never rose to that level where it's like, this is so believable that, but at the same time, his demeanor isn't such that you're like, I clearly don't believe this guy at all.
Yeah. People use that argument all the time where it's like, he's not making any money off this, but it's like, well, he put out a book series.
Like, yeah. I mean, if you say, if he's not making any money out of it, it's just because nobody bought the book, which I mean, it's probably why he changed it to a true story. Because
yeah, maybe.
It's like, people were like, oh, you wrote a fictional story where all you did was go to sleep after you saw an alien. Like, it's not very interesting. And he was like, characters should make smart decisions, not
rational not decisions. Rush
in and get themselves injured.
Right.
So then he was like, no, never mind. It's true.
Like Luke Skywalker should have stayed on Tatooine with his dad, uncle, and aunt. And just
he should have taken over the family farm.
Right. And that's what he should have done.
And then
that's a smart, much smarter decision than following some weird old man who says he knew his father.
And then in Empire, he should have immediately listened to Yoda and stayed on
Yavin.
On
Dagobah.
Dagobah, thank you. I was gonna say Dantooine, but I knew that wasn't right. So many fucking planets in that galaxy.
Kashyyyk, Hoth, what the fuck?
So he should have stayed on Dagobah with Yoda and finished his training.
Yeah.
But, you know, that would have made a less interesting movie because then Return of the Jedi would have just been a training montage.
But according to Charles Hall, it would have been a much better story.
Yeah.
Much smarter, better story.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe for the next three Star Wars movies, they should get Charles Hall to write the
screenplay. Should have never fought Apollo Creed. What's he doing trying to take on a champ boxer?
He couldn't win that fight.
He's an amateur.
Yeah, he's an amateur.
So stupid. He should have just asked Adrian out on a nice date, and he didn't need to prove anything to her or do anything else. He didn't need to eat raw eggs. We could have gotten salmonella.
Yeah.
Why is he punching frozen meat? I mean, that is unsanitary behavior.
That's not just bad for his hands. That's bad for people who are eating at that restaurant or in that butcher shop.
Frodo should have never followed Gandalf. That's what a crazy thing to do. Take a ring to a mountain that's engulfed in flame and going on. Oof,
no, thank you.
Nutty.
I mean, if
stay in the Shire and let Sam would have never asked out the love of his life.
Yeah.
Frodo.
Yeah. Frodo. Yeah. They were lovers by the end. If Charles Hall had written Independence Day, the world governments would have just acquiesced instantly to the alien invasion.
Yes.
Just given up completely, surrendered, allowed them to run our governments.
And they would have never used an Apple Mac 2 to hack an alien spaceship.
No, they would never have done that.
No.
And they also wouldn't have gotten Randy Quaid to fly an a fighter jet.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these movies are just stupid, unbelievable. I can't suspend my disbelief for even a moment to believe any of that stuff.
No.
Nobody vomits in these movies either.
No, where's all the vomiting?
Why isn't Frodo vomiting? When he sees the spider...
he should immediately vomit.
What's the spider's name?
Shelob, I think.
Shelob?
Shelob, I think.
Do they encounter the spider? That starts with an A. Or is that Harry Potter?
I don't know Harry Potter lore.
I think Harry Potter's spider starts with an A. Okay. Well, when those spiders... Well, anyway, when the Ringwraiths and the Nazgûls...
The Nazgûls.
Give me that gabba Nazgûl! Carmella! Where's the Nazgûl?
At the deli in Mordor.
In the deli in Mordor?
Oh! Oh!
Give me some Mordordella.
Oh,
give some Nazgûl.
Deli Nazgabagûl. Yeah, take a cherry pepper ring relish. A little bit of ISO on it, I'll be good.
I don't know. I was trying to think of one, but I can't.
Yeah, I take a little of that Brandywine vinegar.
That one's a...
That's a good reference. Bungfunkers, if you got that one, tweet at us. The hashtag Brandywine vinegar.
What the fuck were we saying?
We were talking about Charles Hall being boring, but that, that's right. Helping support his claims, but then saying that none of the stories are very interesting.
Right, right, right. Yeah. Yeah, none of these stories are very interesting. So it's just, yeah, I don't.
This suffers from a lot of the things that I think you and I get annoyed by with extraterrestrial stories, too. Yeah. How it's just a bunch of, it's very humanoid traits that all these aliens have. It's like, they look like humans, but just a little bit weird.
They all look like Anna Taylor-Joy. We get it.
Right, yeah.
Their fucking eyes on the sides of their heads.
I mean, it's like,
leave her alone.
It's like, I mean, I'm not expecting this from Charles Hall. Like, knowing the rest of the story, like, I'm not expecting him to be very creative and coming up with an alien.
Poor guy.
But, like, you know, come up with some weird extraterrestrials that visit Earth.
I know. This does very much, though, fall in line with kind of the kind of overall, I guess, narrative. And yeah, the zeitgeist about aliens, which I kind of love and I'm really getting into, and that like even X-Files plays into, which is that like the aliens, the Greys, have this deal with the U.S. government, the shadow government and other pieces of the government to willfully abduct us, to experiment on us and create alien human hybrids in exchange for something. And that the Tall Whites are all a part of this. There's the Norwegians. It's very fun. I mean, I find it so fucking fun.
Yeah, there's a whole like lore around it that we have yet to cover.
Yeah, we've never covered the Greys.
What would be good fodder?
It's a big topic.
For this, it is a big
maybe,
topic.
Maybe for the 2-year topic. I don't know. Because
you want to the whole alien lore. Nazgabagul.
But yeah, it is very interesting that there's all these backstories for all these extraterrestrial races. Charles Hall certainly didn't like, it didn't add a lot to the lore, the Tall Whites, frankly.
Yeah.
I don't know how you feel, but it's like, you know, Earth is a pit stop. The Tall Whites only they only do deals that are beneficial to them. It's like, oh, okay. So they win in every scenario. Like,
they're a little boring. They kind of look like David Bowie's, I guess. Like yeah. They're just kind of tall and they're pure white and they're really smart and they have claws and also lasers and voice boxes and they can hypnotize. And it's just kind of like, all right.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah, they're fun. Like, in, you know, I mean, again, it's like, it's very fun talking about his stories because they end in such anticlimactic ways and stuff. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, do I want to meet a tall white? I don't really care.
No, I'll beat the shit out of a tall white. Just get the fuck out of my face. I mean, arrogant. They can so
make
aloof.
They can make me vomit. Fine, that'd be good.
These tall whites are just a bunch of Karens, dude. Maybe we didn't mention this enough in the script, but they can be very arrogant.
Yeah,
they're so much smarter than us. They definitely look down on us.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, fuck you, dude.
That's why they like to prank us.
Fuck you, dude.
Yeah.
Come at me, tall white. I could shoot you with a gun. You can't outrun a fucking bullet.
Yeah, you're 35 miles an hour. My bullet go faster.
Paper thin fucking skin and organs.
Yeah.
Shit.
We'll have an old West standoff out there in the Mojave.
Fucking duke it out here, tall white.
Yeah.
What?
Tall white. Don't come at me, tall white.
There's a...
Vanna White.
Vanna White? Is Vanna White a tall white?
Yeah, I guess so.
Her and Pat Sajak a thing? She's single?
No, I don't think so.
Huh.
I don't think they've ever been in a relationship, but...
Written her a lot of letters.
I know you've thought about her and Pat Sajak a lot.
I'd like to solve the puzzle to unlocking her heart.
Yeah. I'm going to...
Don't act like you haven't Googled as Pat Sajak and Vanna White fucking. Sajak is with Vanna White, right?
Yeah, I mean they're
The duo for Wheel of Fortune.
Yeah, they're the. I mean they are the pair on there. She was previously married to a guy named George Santopietro.
Okay.
From 1990 to 2002. Pat Sajak's been married to Leslie Brown since 1989.
Wow. It's a long marriage in showbiz. That doesn't happen often.
Yeah. What were we talking about? Oh, I was going to say, when I was a kid, Vanna White, probably my first celebrity crush.
Wow.
That's a true story. Used to love watching Wheel of Fortune.
You should spin your wheel, huh?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Rev my engines.
Make you a little bankrupt in the balls, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, the answer to the puzzle, hard things, was my penis.
I'd like to buy a vowel. Penis. I'd like to solve the puzzle, please.
And it was my obvious, penis. Like my whole family would make fun of me because it's like when Wheel of Fortune would come on, I would like stop doing everything and just like stare at the TV.
Yeah. Oh, there's Andy again, licking the TV. Quit looking the TV, boy.
Looking the TV, penis stuffed in the VCR again. Jesus.
Penis stuffed in the VCR.
That boy ain't right. true story, I did urinate in our VCR once.
What? Why?
I don't know.
But that's not how those work, Andy.
They work. It didn't work after that, that's for sure.
Oh,
had to go to the repair shop. I mean, you want to talk about a different time. The VCR was so expensive, you took it to a repair shop.
I know. That could have been a piece of tall white tech right there. Who knows? Maybe they gave us this.
The guy at the repair shop always used to ask my dad, what did he do this time?
Are you serious?
Yeah, because I used to shove toys in there.
What the fuck is wrong with you? I never did this. I never once thought to shove things in the VCR.
Well, you're not a visionary.
You are a troubled child. Just like you just see something, you're just like, I want to put some in there. I don't want to know what the fuck you did with pencil sharpeners.
I'm a troubled adult. Why do you think I don't have a foreskin anymore? Oh my God. Oh!
I think it's because I've told this story before. When I was a child, I stuck a fork in an outlet socket, and I think I never stuck anything in anything ever again.
See, you had a traumatic experience. I stuck everything in everything and never had a bad time.
Well, that's why I'm a virgin, and you have herpes.
And his piece.
Yeah. Tall whites, man. What else can be said about these fucking tall whites, you know? It doesn't really jive with how we feel about aliens, what we like about aliens. You know those bunkfuckers. We still like to have fun, though. It's still fun.
Yeah, we still like that. We can enjoy the stories even if we think that the aliens themselves are dog shit trash. How we feel about the tall whites. No, it's just, we always talk about this. It's like, we don't want to disparage, you know, Charles Hall and his tall white story because we do enjoy it. But at the same time, these aliens just aren't very interesting.
No. There's a small arc on X-Files where it's an alien that has crash landed on Earth, and it doesn't necessarily have a corporeal form, but it has like injected itself into like an oil spill, like a small puddle of oil. Mm. And so it just kind of like has taken the shape of like an sludge, like an oil sludge. And then it will like ingest itself into humans and be able to take over their brain and stuff.
That's cool.
It's cool. It's a very fun story arc, right? And it's a lot fucking doper than a bunch of aliens playing dress up going. I mean, a bunch of aliens playing dress up and going to Vegas is something that we would write. I'm not saying that we're smart enough to write something cool.
No, no. And but the reason that we wrote it would be a different reason than Charles Hall wrote this. It's not to like maybe prove extraterrestrials are real.
Right.
Like represent this as being like a thing that extraterrestrials would do. It would be like, oh, that's funny.
It would be.
Because it's funny.
Yeah.
Them dressing up and going to gamble.
Yes.
How did they get Earth money?
I don't know. I guess the generals gave them an allowance.
The generals give them cash.
And then like a fucking tour bus pulls up and they all get off and they're like dressed all like tourists and they're all goofy looking. Like walking around.
Yeah. Anybody who's ever seen like a group of tourists knows like when you're from a place like we're from Chicago where there's lots of tourists, you just get like. Anybody could walk off a tour bus and you wouldn't be like, that's weird. You'd be like, oh, tourist.
It is weird, though. Yeah, when you live in a place that's a tourist hotspot, how you can just pick them out. You just can. Yeah. I don't know what it is about being tourists. It's just, I guess it's just the way you walk. You just, you have a sense of direction. Like, I know where I'm going. I know where I'm at. I know these landmarks. I've seen this shit a million times. Like,
yeah, I'm not
going to the Jimmy John's. I'm getting my number 5 no onions, or I do enjoy their Cubano. Decent. It's not good, but it's not bad, I guess. Mm. Pickles and ham.
Yeah.
Jeez.
There's no
mustard.
There's no roast pork on it?
No, there's no roast pork on it.
No. It's not Jimmy John's. Not really a Cubano then, Jimmy.
Yeah, I guess not really, but it's got some of the stuff of a Cubano.
Mm.
Anyway, then you walk back, you just kind of walk with this purpose, but maybe tourists, they're kind of like clumped together and they're kind of like,
you know, I have to say, I come off very much as a local. So many people ask me for directions.
Even when you're in places where you're not supposed to be?
It's happened before where I'm like not really sure where I am and someone will ask me for directions. Like I think I come off as like I know what I'm doing, which is weird because
you're very approachable. You have a very Charles Hall. I think you and Charles Hall would be very similar, but you would have gotten yourself killed easily because you would have made some off-color comment or done something aggressive like you would have.
Yeah,
you would have done your little thing like that, and they would have been like,
yeah. There's no way I would have survived. I'm not as mundane as him.
No.
Or I would have been like out in the desert shouting, and they would have been like, what the fuck is this? And then just shoot me.
But you have a very bunkfuckers. Andy has an incredibly approachable, non-threatening, until you get to know him, demeanor and appearance to him.
Yeah, no, I don't. It's obvious from looking at me that I can't do you any physical harm. But then once you get to know me, it's clear that I'm a psychopath and that I will easily engage in emotional, scarring of you.
Yeah. Oh, good Lord. Yeah, I mean, I don't know, Andy.
I don't know what else to say about tall whites.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite story? Do you have a favorite, encounter with them?
The Shed is my favorite.
It's so fucking weird,
because
right?
It's like, there's so much about it. Like, he heard a noise that he thought was the general, and it's like, how would you, like, why would you assume it's
so
the general?
Boring. It's just like, why? Like, why wouldn't you make up something fun? Like, why did they wake you up and bring you to a different location just to leave you there and bring you back?
Yeah, they could have just done this while you were asleep, and they knew you were asleep at that point, so they didn't have to wake you up.
And why him? Why? Where were all the other people?
Yeah, yeah. And then in the petroleum oils shed. The liquid shed.
Fucking stare at this wall. Think about what you've done, Charles Hall. Well, okay, then I guess I'll think about what I've done. First, I woke up in the morning. I was 0500.
And why did they hypnotize him? Like, he's so trustworthy, yet they had to hypnotize him to get him to do that. They couldn't have just said, you need to go in the shed and stay there until we come back and get you.
I like the story. My favorite is still the story where Range 4 Harry and him communicate via body language that they both don't know what the tall white female wanted. Or what she was doing out there.
Yeah.
And I like that Charles Hall is like, he communicated with body language. I knew. Maybe Range 4 Harry was saying something totally different. Like, maybe Range 4 Harry was saying something like,
watch your fucking back, dude.
Yeah, or I'm horny, dude. I want to have sex with you. I've been pursuing you. Charles Hall's like, ah, he's telling me that he doesn't know what she was doing out here.
Yeah, then he went and read a book.
Yeah. Then he went and read a book. Charles Hall would have been like, yeah, and then they took me into another room and, you know, they took my pants. At first they took my belt off and,
you know, that was my nice corded belt, corded genuine leather belt. Then they took my khakis off. My khakis, of course, waist size 34, length 30, standard khaki pants. They took those off, removed my tight white underwear and the jock strap that I wear routinely, lucky jock strap, of course. Then they proceeded to put a what looked like, you know, kind of a ski pole type object up my anus. They repeatedly shoved this tool into my anus. And then they took what looked like an ice cream scooper and cupped my testicles. They cupped them and served them in a bowl. And while it was uncomfortable afterwards, I just decided, you know, I'll just listen to some Enya and just relax and go take a nap. Shoved it into my anus. That's Charles Hall being probed by the gray aliens.
Yeah.
Afterwards, he's just like, fuck it.
Oh, Charles Hall. What a man. What a legend.
Then they took out one of those novelty hand clappers. You might have been able to buy them at Chuck E. Cheese's for, oh, I would say, you know, 10 to 20 tickets. These are a plastic handle. There's a hand on one end, a hand on the other, and then a harder plastic hand in the middle. When you shake them back and forth, they create a loud clapping noise. They took them and placed them under my breasts and flapped my titties. I can't get through it. So stupid. They flapped my titties back and forth while what making a sound that sounded like giggling before again probing my anus. So I just decided, you know, I'll have a bowl of oatmeal plain and then go take a nap.
What are the chances that we could get Charles Hall to read, do like an audiobook of
erotic?
Like, yeah, just like erotica, any erotica or like action suspense, like a Tom Clancy book.
He has this incredible ability where he's just like, he's just talking and talking and talking. And it's like, what is the point of what you're saying?
Oh, you can tell
he's
that
so Wisconsin. He's
you can tell even when
Wisconsin.
He gets like amused by stuff, it's so, it's like such mundane stuff that he gets amused by.
Yeah.
Like the fact that she thought it was amusing. Her name was the butterfly because they didn't have any butterflies on her planet. It's like, that's not even mildly amusing. If you're amused by that, fuck you.
God, Charles, you poor, poor old man.
Aha, you gave me a nickname that doesn't correspond to a physical object on my homeworld. What an amusing situation.
Oh, God.
All right, Andy, let's get in some verdicts here, I think. Right. I think we're ready.
Yeah.
We've milked these tall, milky aliens for all we can.
We've milked these like those aliens milked Charles Hall's prostate.
They took what looked like a large novelty foam finger, shrunk it down using a small device, you know, like a box, small speaker-looking device, shrunk it down, shoved it into my anus, touched my male G-spot, and I cummed quite a lot. They collected the cum in what looked like a novelty.
Everything's novelty. clearly these whites went to Chuck E. Cheese while they were in Vegas. They weren't gambling. They were going to Dave & Buster's.
I collected my cum in a novelty beer helmet where you have two beer cans. Then they put the helmet on and they drank his cum or something. I don't know.
Then one put the helmet on its head. It inserted the tubes into its mouth. And then it proceeded to guzzle my cum.
then they, you know, gave him the nickname Cum Guzzler, which was amusing to them because
they did not have cum guzzlers on their planet.
All right, Andy, you want to go first? You want me to go first?
I'll go first.
Yeah, go for it.
Wow, Bunk Bunkers, I'm going to surprise you with this one, I think. Case closed. I ain't buying these tall whites. I mean, like, in all seriousness, as much fun as it is, like, these, there's very little, there's no evidence for these extraterrestrials.
No.
Like, there's even less evidence than, like, Bob Lazar. Like, it seems pretty clear to me, in my estimation, that Charles Hall was doing this weather job, which is probably why he has this, like, intimate knowledge of the desert out there. That part's probably real.
Yeah.
And while he's out there in these weather shacks all by himself, alone in the desert for months at a time, he probably started thinking up some stories and stuff. And, you know, he thought, oh, this could be a good book, without realizing that, you know, he's not a very good writer because he doesn't have any sense of, like, action or suspense. And so then he came back, you know, when he was done with his service, is like, what does he do now? Maybe I'll write these books.
Well,
he put out the books. Nobody gave a shit.
Yeah.
So he's like, actually, they're true. It's not fiction at all.
Right.
So that's my feeling. Case closed.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to echo Andy's verdict here. Also, case closed on my end, although a lot of fun. A lot of fun to be had here, Bunk Funkers. But yeah. Those are our verdicts. Let us know what you think. What do you make of these tall whites? I mean, what's the hashtag here, Andy?
What is the hashtag here? Tall Betty White.
That's fun.
Okay.
Let's just do that.
Tall Betty White.
Tall
that's
Betty
like,
White.
That's like a Wheel of Fortune puzzle.
That
before
is
and after.
Tall Betty White, let us know what you think about the tall white aliens in Charles Hall. As always, you can find us on Instagram and Twitter at Mr. Bunker Pod. Find us on YouTube by YouTube searching.
Or you can find us on Kathy Geithweist's social media platform, @ Mr. Bunker Pod.
That famous newspaper comic.
Yeah.
So, turned social media mogul. Kathy.
Social media platform, Kathy. You can find us @ Mr. Bunker Pod.
You can find us on YouTube by YouTube searching Mr. Bunker. Got a lot of great videos on there. And you can always email us, MrBunkerPod@gmail.com. Or if you feel so inclined and want a little extra Mr. Bunker action, you can get access to our Patreon-only show every month. New episode of Andy and Art Debunked by donating on the Patreon, patreon.com/MrBunkerPod. Boy, Andy. Well, we have to take off here, Andy.
Yeah, we have to get in our little tic-tac.
Little tic-tac.
And we got to shoot off.
We got to shoot off into space.
Shoot off into space where, you know, we will make people vomit and then they'll go to sleep.
That's right. And we're going to establish little pit stops.
Yeah.
Space. We're going to be space truckers. So for not the titular Mr. Bunker, but for my pentacle.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, no.
Oh.
Pedicle.
Penicle?
Peduncle.
Peduncle?
Peduncle.
Peduncle?
Peduncle. Co-host Andy Hart. I'm Art Stone saying that was the whole enchilada.
Peduncle.